I would like to call to order the first of our two public hearings for tonight. First public hearing on the proposed local law number E of 2012, amending the Tompkins County Charter and Code, Chapter 28, Election Districts. And I have a few people signed up. If anyone else would like to speak, that's possible after the sign-ups have gone. And each person will get 3 minutes. And please pay attention to Kathy Covert, who will help you keep track of the 3 minutes. First person is Margaret Hobby, and then John Graves.
I'm Margaret Hobby. I live in the city of Ithaca, and I was a member of the Independent Redistricting Commission. I wanted to speak very briefly about the work of the commission in general and why 14 districts. In addition to complying with state and federal constitutions and laws as to proper district apportionment, we were asked at the very beginning, charged by the legislature, to consider the following factors: minimization of population variance among districts, compactness of districts, practicable consistency with existing municipal boundaries and neighborhoods within Tompkins County, balance and reasonableness of representation for the diversity of citizens residing in all parts of the county. We talked about all of these issues at virtually every meeting. There were just many, many things to consider. And the 14 districts grew out of this discussion of all these different factors. It wasn't a number that we started with. We weren't trying to save money by cutting back to 14. We considered as few as 13 and as many as 17 districts. 14 was the number that worked the best when we considered all these other factors. And the fact that there are 4 in the city and 10 outside the city is just a matter of the census figures. It's just the way things worked out numerically. Thank you.
Thank you, Margaret. John Graves, to be followed by Stu Stein.
Hi, my name is John Graves, and I'm the president of the South Hill Civic Association. South Hill is the home to Emerson, Tompkins County's largest brownfield site. Hopefully, within the next 10 years, before the next census, a new high-density, mixed-use development will emerge on this abandoned and polluted site. Light manufacturing, clean energy R&D, commercial space, mixed-income housing, and most importantly, a combined heat and power plant in a district energy system similar to Cornell's will all be part of this new development. If the South Hill Civic Association has any say in the matter, the Emerson site will be transformed from a now-abandoned last-century industrial Superfund site into a model for a next-century environmentally responsible development. Redistricting Tompkins County could help the South Hill Civic Association achieve this goal, connecting South Hill to at least part of Collegetown and downhill to the bottom of East Hill would give this district a shared constituency, a mix of students and permanent residents in close proximity to an institution of higher education and a commercial center. When the 100 acres of Emerson becomes a smart and sustainable version of Collegetown, having one county legislator representing this constituency will prove to provide some advantages for Tompkins County, specifically when it comes to environmentally responsible development. The county legislator from this new district could also assist in the redevelopment process of Emerson by helping to correct all of the negative impacts created by an unplanned college town, including correcting the lessons learned by not preserving established East Hill middle-class neighborhoods. I urge you to reconsider linking South Hill with Collegetown in the neighborhoods downhill from Collegetown, or what appears on redistricting map 14C, version 4 or 5. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Stu Stein is next, and then Herb Engman.
Stuart Stein, I live at 11 Cornell Walk in Bell Sherman area. First, let me say that as a former legislator and as a former chairman of a redistricting committee, I recognize how difficult it is to satisfy everybody. It's a difficult job, and I sympathize with those of you who've done such a good job. I come here to express similar concerns from the other side of the district that was my previous speaker spoke to. I'm also in favor of retaining the East Hill district together with the Cornell dormitories as it has been in previous 20 or 30 years. I represented that district, and the map that's not shown on the wall, but I think is in a rolled up roll over there that I hope will be put up there. I think it's 14C version 5 is the one that I would recommend. Interestingly, it's very close to the district that I represented. It was a viable district. The people in the neighborhood have a history of that district. They understand that to be their neighborhood. They love the people on South Hill, but that's not their neighborhood. It is just across the creek, even though there's a portion that might have to be added. So I urge the reconsideration. I think this was one of the possible recommendations, one of the recommendations that was made before. That's C5, version 5. I recommend that over the one that's being considered. I strongly urge that we go back to that one, which is similar to the one that existed before and represented a very cohesive neighborhood of diversity between students and residents, as the previous speaker spoke about trying to achieve, and in fact partly achieving at South Hill. We can do both, and so I think we should go towards that one. That's what I recommend. Thanks.
Thank you, Stu, and welcome back. Herb Engman and then Verlaine Boyd.
Herb Engman, town supervisor of the town of Ithaca. First of all, I wanted to thank the county legislature for creating a truly independent redistricting committee and for the committee in doing such an excellent job. I think probably this is more unique in the state than most people realize. The town of Ithaca early on declared its desire that the number of legislators representing the town of Ithaca be reduced in the redistricting. The reason for that is when something is everybody's responsibility, in effect, it's nobody's responsibility. And we found having 7 or 8 people representing us not to be terribly productive. The redistricting committee managed to reduce that to 5, so we'll still have a couple of small splinter districts in the town. But the fact is, when somebody represents a majority of people over here and a small number of people over here, they're going to consider the majority of people over here. And that's why we want fewer numbers representing the town of Ithaca on the county legislature. We have been living with the 15-district system and with that overrepresentation for 10 years. So we've paid our dues, and we would very much like to see the current plan passed so that we can hopefully be a little bit more engaged in the future. So I wanted to congratulate both the commission and the county for taking this approach. And I think if it's truly an independent commission and it's making a recommendation, I think there's some reason for the county legislature to accept that recommendation since it is an independent commission. Thank you.
Thank you, Herb. Verlaine Boyd and then Simon St. Laurent.
Good afternoon. My name is Verlaine Boyd. I live at 315 Pleasant Street, where I have lived with my husband since 1970. Before retiring, I worked for Cornell as a writer and editor, and my husband was a professor in design and environmental analysis. I have come here this afternoon to voice my objection to the plan under consideration and to state my support for scenario 14C, version 0.5, which appears to be a much more logical solution to the redistricting problem. There are several reasons why I am against creating a district that primarily represents students. Gerrymandering has its place, but should be done with great care and only to ensure fair representation. I do not think that students in Ithaca are disenfranchised by the county. For the most part, students live here part-time for a few years and seem to have little interest in local politics. In fact, I believe the number of students who vote in any given election is very low, and therefore a representative from this proposed district could be elected only with a third or half as many votes as representatives from the surrounding districts. Given this, why wouldn't it be more representative to base the district boundaries on the number of registered voters? Or on the other hand, why not make districts that would ensure that a professor was elected, or a maintenance worker, or an administrator, or a local businessman? These are surely just as important components in our community as students, and generally live here much longer. Moreover, all these groups are interdependent. Without one group, the rest of the community would collapse. So by necessity and choice, we live, work, and play together in mixed environments. The more we know about each other and the more we intermingle, the more we learn to respect each other. I don't want separate districts for certain groups. I want all districts to be for everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. Simon St. Laurent and then Robert Lynch.
Good evening, and thank you for taking up the Tompkins County legislative redistricting in an independent fashion. After watching New York State politics for too many years, it's delightful to see somebody take this seriously. I've lived in the town of Dryden outside of Varna for the past 12 years. Before that, I lived in the town of Ithaca for a year and a half, and I realized it's probably 20 years ago today that I moved into the city of Ithaca, into College Town, for a year. So I've been watching Tompkins County for a long time. I've seen various configurations of election districts. I'm actively involved in the town of Dryden. I'm a former chair of the Dryden Democrats. And I'm the lucky guy who does the database work most of the time to figure out, you know, petitions and election districts and all of that good stuff. So I've been watching this year very, very closely. The previous set of districts had always seemed very strange to me, I think because of my time in the town of Ithaca and watching the town of Ithaca get kind of sliced into small pieces. Dryden has always at least made more sense. I think it's easier to avoid mistakes when you're starting from an immovable edge of a county. But as I looked at the 17 district, the 15 district, all the other variations, I saw some unusual configurations, neighborhoods put together that really didn't make much sense. And I was extremely relieved when the 14 district scenario was settled on. It connected more neighborhoods that I knew each other better than any of the other scenarios I'd seen. And I've been extremely happy to have all the maps available so that I can get some sense of, you know, how we came to this and how much better this solution is than the other ones that we explored along the way. The census data was a basis. The commission has made some very rational decisions, I think, about respecting boundaries and maximizing representation. And I would encourage the legislature to act promptly and positively on their recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you, Simon. Robert Lynch and then Nancy Schuler.
Good evening. My name is Robert Lynch. I live at 175 Gray Road, Town of Enfield. At the Redistricting Commission meeting and then subsequently at a county legislature committee meeting, I advanced an idea which I think has promise and benefit for this county. I like the 14 district map that the Redistricting Commission came up with. I think it's a good plan. I think it has a good district lines that provide fair representation. However, my suggestion is that we retain the current 15-member legislature. Now, how is that to be accomplished? Accomplished by designating one seat to be an at-large district, to be elected countywide At the same time as all other legislators are elected, which would namely be next year, and so doing, it would give the voters of this county not one voice on the county legislature, but two. You'd have the at-large district, which would be elected countywide. This person would have no special authority or powers. He would be, he or she would be equal to any other legislator. But it would give the voters in this county two representatives on the county legislature. It would also eliminate the problem of a tie vote. 14 members of the legislature could tie. In fact, that was demonstrated earlier this year with the chairmanship vote. So I would suggest that it has two principal benefits. I know support has been limited up till now, but I would respectfully request you consider retaining the 15-member legislature and creating one at-large district seat. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lynch. Nancy Schuler is the last person signed up, but others can also speak if you've decided. So you can just change, you know, after Nancy, I'll say whoever, you know, follow Nancy. Hi, Nancy. This is old home week, huh?
Yes. Someone's in my seat. Hi, Nancy Schuler. I live. We've lived in Lower East Hill on Ferris Place since 1974. 23 of those years, I represented that area on either city council or the county board. It's a very unique district in that it has permanent residents, renters, students, graduate students, young families, empty nesters, seniors, and a commercial district, making up a whole neighborhood. In looking at, I'm supposed to ask Greg at this point if he would put up 14-CV5.
Hey, cuz.
It may take up time.
Please use the mic.
Thank you, Mr. Proto. When you look at that one, it does list, it does show all the things I just went through, and it shows two neighborhoods. It shows South Hill and East Hill and College Town together making up an entire a community. And I would certainly support you looking at that scenario for your next 10 years. Because I think having a commercial district, in this case, it would, if you listen to what John had suggested, you could have the possibility of two commercial districts, and you have quality of life neighborhoods with people living and working and playing within that area. And I was on the City Redistricting Committee, and I'm not speaking as a member of that committee. I'm speaking as a representative of Lower East Hill since 1974. And that I think it just, when we talked about it and you look at things, it's like red cups and blue cups. If those of you know what we mean when we're talking about Ithaca College and Cornell, we refer to it as red cups and blue cups. So there are issues that they have in common, and I think it would be important, and I think it would be a good solution to what we need to do for the next 10 years. As you know, the neighborhood is changing as we speak, so you're going to be having to be looking at 1,200 North students in that particular area, but those of you will be dealing with that in another 10 years. I urge you to really consider -5. Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. Eric Lerner, another former legislator.
Good evening. I'm Eric Lerner. I live at 504 South Plain Street in Ward 2 of the City of Ithaca. I've been a member of the county's Redistricting Commission, and once upon a time, back in the last century, I was a member of this legislature. On the commission, I believe I was the most persistent opponent of the 14-district map. I want to summarize why I opposed it, and then I want to tell you why I changed my mind and voted to support that proposal. I'll start with the central demographic issue we faced. After the 1980 census, when the county first drew a map with districts, the city's population represented almost exactly one-third of the county's. The city got 5 of 15 seats. With each census since then, the city's share has shrunk to about 29.5% in the 2010 census. The current map shows 5 city districts, 3 of which also include a sliver of the town of Ithaca. The legislature's reasonable charge to the commission was to minimize such slivers, which entailed a map with the city's districts entirely contained within the city. Any map that does not keep the city intact would continue to divide the town of Ithaca into an unreasonably large number of chunks. It would also continue the illusion that the city has five districts when in fact it has four and a fraction. The algebra of population gave us two options, 14 districts with four in the city or 17 districts with five in the city. Initially, I opposed the 14-district map. I foresaw a possible legislative stalemate with tied votes. Also, I foresaw an increase in the workload for each legislator, which is already immense. I still believe that these are genuine drawbacks to the proposal, but after looking closely at the alternatives, I believe they all would have significantly worse defects. The 17-district idea looked good at first. It kept the city intact with five districts and didn't further burden legislators' workloads. But I'm sorry to say, when we attempted to divide the area outside the city into 12 districts instead of 10, we got coleslaw. The towns that today have town lines that mostly coincide with district boundaries, Danby, Caroline, Dryden, Groton, would be carved up into seemingly random chunks. Also, the smaller we make our districts, the harder it is to work around the most densely populated census blocks, that is, dormitories. There's just no good way to draw a 17-district map. The Ithaca Journal has quoted some city legislators as concerned that the city's share of the legislature is shrinking disproportionately. I believe that's not accurate. In the current map, the city has the equivalent of 4.6 seats, not 5. 4.6 is 30.7% of 15 seats, while the city's 4 seats equal 28.6% of the 14-seat body. That roughly corresponds to the city's 29.5% share of county population. Taking that all into account, it seems quite clear to me that the 14-district alternative is the best choice available to us at this time, with this map, with these census numbers. I urge each of you to vote to adopt the Commission's recommendation.
Eric, you've got something written, if you wouldn't mind handing that up. And anybody else whose remarks are written, please, if you want to pass those up, we can have them recorded exactly. And I've got John Marcham, and John is the last one signed up. Except, I guess, Marianne Sumner has signed up, and maybe other people. Okay, John Marcham.
And that's multiple copies. Multiple copies? Okay.
I, too, am a former legislator and also a member of about four of the last six reapportionment committees of either the city or the county. And I'm here speaking as a person in politics who had to chair the ward committee in the fourth ward, which is Lower East Hill and College Town, and a big chunk of Cornell dorms. And in the past, this has produced a great number of student representatives, and we have found that we were not served by those student representatives who often served a year or 2 years, didn't get any heft on their legislative bodies, and also left without having learned very much about how to operate and get to represent us. The result you can see in the bad roads in the ward and in parking troubles as well as noise and the trouble in College Town. As a ward chairman, and this is often not considered, but the wards are responsible for vetting candidates for office, finding people who will come, who have proved by their civic work that they are willing to work on a public body, stick with it, maybe get a little seniority. The interest of students and the interest of permanent residents is wide. Noise, parking, trash are a concern of permanent residents, and the concern of students is almost the opposite, but that's not quite fair to all students. But the stories out of College Town right now reflect a little of the problem. I would hope that you would consider seriously C3-5, because that joins us with South Hill. It also... We already will start out with about 50% of that ward being in College Town undergraduates, and we'll also lose if we can get rid of the C3 C3 plan, about 900 undergraduate students on the north side of the gorge, Cascadilla Gorge. So I would hope seriously that you would consider this in the interest of representing the putting us together with people on South Hill who are in the same boat of having a large student population and also wanting to represent permanent resident interests. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Mary Ann Sumner, and if anybody else is interested in speaking, they can come up after Mary Ann.
Thank you. Mary Ann Sumner, Town of Dryden. I live at 107 Nehemiah Road. I may be speaking for myself more than for the town at the moment, but I attended several meetings of the Redistricting Commission and developed an incredible admiration for the work they were facing, the complexity of issues, the complexity of the data, and thanks, incidentally, to Mr. Potter for providing data analysis and various scenarios. But thanks especially to the Redistricting Committee for respecting municipal boundaries as much as possible. I know the issues in the city are different from the issues outside the city, but it was nice to see the town of Ithaca being respected as a neighborhood, essentially, and certainly in the town of Dryden, where we had, I think, the highest growth rate in the last sentence. And happy to see that didn't disrupt our legislative districts much. So I want to say thanks to the commission, and I hope the legislature will proceed with the proposed district map.
Thank you, Mary Ann. Next is Cynthia Brock.
Hello, my name is Cynthia Brock. I live at 409 Campbell Avenue. I'm the representative for the First Ward in the City of Ithaca. As we look at redistricting, how we redistrict really determines whether and how our communities have a voice in our community. And I was a bit dismayed to see that the 15-district scenario was not something that was being considered, because I feel that by moving from 15 to 14 districts, and by aligning the district along city-town boundaries, we really lose the benefit of a more regional view and oversight of how we look at our city or our resources in our county. As a representative that represents both South Hill and West Hill, I would say that these two regions are directly and intimately impacted by the development and activities that go on in the town, and vice versa. And I see the advantage of having a county legislature who is directly responsible and accountable for those residents in that area together. And when we deal with issues of traffic, transportation, development, contamination, stormwater runoff, these are just a few of the issues that overlap these boundaries. I don't think that the community will be as well served when we replicate those divisions on the county level. Since the 14-district scenario is the one that we are considering today, I would like to express my support for scenario C5, in the sense that C5 supports our community by ensuring that all the districts within the city have a viable population of permanent residents. This will preserve the voice of our residents throughout the city and make sure that the voice of those who have a vested interest in the city, who have invested here, are raising our children here, have businesses here, that those voices will be heard on the county level. C5 will also reduce the administrative costs by likely reducing the number of elections that may result from having a legislator who, from representing a student district, may likely be a student themselves, and in all likelihood whose term will come up during, or whose education will be completed during the time of their term. And so the cost of running those elections will be something that that could be avoided by supporting the C5 scenario. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Cynthia. Anyone else like to speak as part of this public hearing? All right, before I close the public hearing, I would just like to say that we do not have on our agenda tonight any motion regarding the local law. It did pass out of the Government Operations Committee on Friday. There's a motion in. That motion is in our packet, but it is not on the floor at this point. And I think it's been a question as to whether we are legally able to vote on this tonight. So if I could just take a second and ask Jonathan to answer that question, just so folks, if you're waiting for us to discuss this, we might discuss it, but I don't. My understanding is we won't be voting on it tonight. Jonathan?
Sure.
Pull your mic down?
Sure. I would certainly not recommend voting on it tonight. It takes the form of a local law. Under law, local law needs to be on the desks of the each member of the legislature for at least a week prior to the vote. In its final form, this law was not on the desks of the legislators in its final form for a week prior to today. Understand the reason for that is because it was not on the GO agenda, and typically the legislature staff would not put something on the desks unless it is on the agenda. It was later added to the agenda at the meeting, but the legislature staff could not have known in advance that that was going to happen. So the legal requirement that it sit on the desks isn't met. If you vote on it today, it would be at the next meeting.
Okay. At the September 4th meeting. So with that, I'll close the first public hearing and open the public hearing on addition to Agriculture District number 2, west side of Cougar Lake. Is there anyone who'd like to address that issue? Hearing none, I'll close that public hearing and open the meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature for August 21st, 2012. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic
for
which it stands, one nation, under God,
indivisible,
with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call of members.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa has asked to be excused. Mr. Stein?
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Keeper?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAtee?
Present.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
14 members present.
Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
All right. Are there any members of the public who would like to address the legislature on any issue? All right. Municipal officials. Marianne? Delighted to have you come as speak as the town supervisor of the town of Dryden.
Now that I know the way, I may do this more often. I don't get cable TV where I live, and I understand you'll be addressing that later, so I never get to see the film of this meeting. I just wanted to update you ever so briefly on the status of our gas drilling lawsuit, our zoning amendment lawsuit. I guess no news is good news, but the opponent has not filed a brief yet. The 60-day time frame for that is long past. I understand that's a pretty soft deadline, so we certainly anticipate that eventually the attorney will file a brief, and we will have 30 days to respond. At this point, we don't anticipate a hearing being scheduled in the appellate division until the very end of the year, if not possibly January. So it's nerve-wracking, but it's just wait and see. In the meantime, we have finally almost completed a long-awaited update to our zoning laws in order to implement our comprehensive plan, which was adopted in 2004. It was an extremely thorough process with some amazing improvements to our zoning code that make the way clearer for development in ways that we know the town town embraces. More development in areas that already have infrastructure, for example, and still some pretty amazing conservation development concepts in the more open areas. But the big project right now has been critical environmental areas. Having finished the zoning, we think it's important, particularly in addressing development issues of all kinds, and gas drilling in particular, to be sure that we are aware of areas, sensitive environmental areas, that we really need to be careful developing. As you may remember from the UNA project, there are, I can't remember exactly, but more UNAs in the town of Dryden than I think in the rest of the county altogether. We have an amazing number of wetlands, bodies of water, steep slopes, and a couple of sensitive flora and fauna communities. So, starting with that database and working out and with some new wetlands guidelines from the state and so forth, we are now working on up to 12 critical environmental areas. The first three have been submitted to the state, and we continue to work through possibly 20 eventually. It's a laborious process. The planning department has worked very hard to identify natural features that are important in these areas and to reach out to residents in these areas to be sure that they understand what this means to their neighborhood. Most people are very welcoming of the protection to areas that they know are valuable and sensitive, and people who have questions pretty much understand after a chance to talk with us. I don't think anybody minds having this tool available as a database. The State Environmental Review is going to be required whether we have CEAs defined or not. This just helps make the legislative bodies more aware of what areas we should be protecting. So that and a lot of other things. We're about to finish our wireless broadband project. I think the last tower went operative last week. I personally am still waiting for that tower to be able to see me. I really have my fingers crossed. I may be able to have better internet access soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Marianne. Don't go away. We might have questions. In particular, I would just mention that you can always, once you get good broadband access, you can always go to the county website and actually stream our
I'm looking
down.
Forward to it once I have something like serious broadband access.
Does anybody have questions? Mike?
Marianne, one of the things the county partnered with the town about is for aquifer protection and investigation. I wondered where that stands.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for asking that, Mike, and the reminder and the nudge. We were waiting for quite a while for the final delineation from USGS. We have that now. We have the aquifer protection template law. It's pretty much a matter of putting those together. I think it's neck and neck with the road protection law, which we also have all the engineering done. We have the template. Been focusing on the zoning and haven't quite brought them together. I expect both to be in place before the end of the year.
Any other questions? Dooley.
I'm really curious, which were the three CEAs that have already been forwarded to the state? Do you remember?
They were in the northwest quadrant. I could point them out on a map, but we took them in order, kind of following the numbering of the UNAs.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
And that's on the town website, right?
Yes, ma'am. In excruciating detail.
All right, any other questions? Thanks, Marianne.
Thank you.
Appreciate you coming down. Legislator, privilege of the floor. Anyone? Dooley.
Well, if you're a Cayuga Heights resident, stop watching this meeting. The community block party is going on right now. And I'm sorry to be missing it.
Okay. Mike, Carol, and Frank.
This weekend, there will be the Civil War encampment, which is being sponsored by the Tompkins County Civil War Sesquicentennial Commemoration Commission. Eventually I'll learn that all. We've got a group of educators coming in. They'll be set up for 2 days. There'll be a pancake breakfast and a chicken barbecue, opportunity to learn about soldiers from Tompkins County in the historic past. The commission is pretty excited about this event. We hope that folks can come down. It'll be at the Veterans Volunteer Firemen's facility on Elmira Road. And come on out for a few hours and enjoy yourselves and learn a little bit about what happened 150 years ago.
Thank you, Mike. Good reminder. Carol.
Hi. 9 months is a very long time to wait, and I just can't let this moment pass. I have photos. I have a grandchild, my first one. I'm just back. I literally arrived on the bus and came right to this meeting, so I'm still in jeans from New York City. And what I want to say here, other than that anybody who wants to see photos ask me in the break.
See, we weren't sure, Carol.
It is how interesting, how the lesson that was rung home to me, being there in the hospital and then home in the first days, that how important it is to have community, how it takes a village to raise a child, how you don't just do that by yourself. The hospital was there, the streets to get her to the hospital, the support networks around setting up a home, just everything in your life at the various stages of life. I mean, I'm seeing this little, tiny, vulnerable baby and realizing what it takes. But there's a whole family and a community around that. And then I was, you know, walking through the streets of New York City and realizing the increase, even in neighborhoods that didn't used to have this, in homelessness, in people out on the streets, in poverty, and people clearly begging and hungry, and you know, just how scary it is that we're in danger of dismantling some of the support networks. I feel very privileged to live here, and where we do have a supportive community, and all those lessons were brought home to me in very much more deeper ways than we do feel on a day-to-day basis. So just wanted to share that. And I have pictures.
Thank you, Carol. Frank, I don't know how you're going to follow that, but go ahead. And then Leslie.
I'm going to ask Carol to put the pictures up on your Facebook page or whatever, however you do that.
So. When you friend me, I'll put it back. those big screens over in our other room, we can beam it, our pictures over to
it. Okay. Ready?
Well, yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Your turn, Frank.
A quick report. Since we met last, the special Blue Ribbon Committee on Agriculture that the governor appointed met up in Seneca Falls right after the last legislative meeting. And the major topic, obviously, was agriculture. There was an issue regarding the proposed change that the EPA is proposing regarding navigable waters and what the item is that they want to adapt and adopt. The concern is that it will certainly, if it's accepted, and they're proposing it not as a federal change, it's more of a guidance document, and it may not need the approval of Congress. Senator Gillibrand's representative was there, and we had an opportunity to quiz her about it. At any rate, the Blue Ribbon Committee took opposition to it. Apparently, there's even a piece in there about highway departments may, if this passes, highway departments may need EPA and DEC permits to do road work. So at any rate, some concern was raised about that. It'll be on the NYSAC agenda when we meet up in Syracuse, as I understand it. The Farm Bill was a topic of discussion, and obviously it hasn't been passed yet. One of the major concerns is the impact not just on agriculture and the delay in getting subsidy money to anyone who's in agriculture. It's the piece on food stamps. There's a major hit on the food stamps, and as you know, in this county, our numbers have been going up. I just wanted to mention that those are the two of the items that came up. Support of agriculture generally in the community and in the state with the yogurt. You've read the article in the paper about the governor supporting the yogurt summit. The interesting thing was that they wanted to make sure when he appeared over in the western part of the state, because there's a need for milk in the state to support the increase in the yogurt, that there weren't trucks from Ohio delivering milk to the Buffalo area. We just needed, anyway, that came up. It was a little humorous, but it came up for discussion. Two items that are coming up on the Ag and Farmland Board agenda tomorrow night are a discussion about the county's proposed conservation plan, and the second is the focus area plan. And the third is this EPA item. Pat, did I cover all three of those?
Yes.
Did you remember any? Pat and I are members of the Farm and Ag Land Board.
Yeah.
The last item I just wanted to mention, in the legal section of the journal, the last week, there was a notice that the Workforce Investment Board has a request in to change some of their work plan. And I tried to reach them to see if we could get a copy of it, and I understand it's on their website. I haven't been able to speak to anybody over there. Does anyone know on this? I called Ed Marks to find out if he knew, and he really didn't have chapter and verse about it. Does anyone know what they're proposing to change in their work plan? Because I don't think we've seen it on the planning committee. Not that I know of. Have you, Will?
I have not, Frank, and I will look into that as well.
Okay, thank you. So I will. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Frank. Leslie.
I'd just like to respectfully ask Frank to friend me on Facebook, because then I will actually get into it, Frank.
Leslie, you have been my friend all the time that we've been on this board.
On FB, Frank, on FB.
You don't want me on Facebook.
It's true. Frank, I'm not on Facebook. I don't get there that often. Anyhow, I just have a few things. September 8th, back to school is coming real quickly. Where did the summer go? And on September 8th, the Southside Community Center, in collaboration with a number of other agencies and individuals in the community, is hosting their second, I think it's the second annual, Back to School Backpack Giveaway. And essentially, we're asking this community, and I'm asking all of you here and those of you not at the block party in Cayuga Heights with watching our TV or meeting on TV to please donate any sort of school supplies you can. The Southside Community Center is asking. We, the members of Southside and some of us as volunteers, help stuff those backpacks, and our goal is 100, and we give away to children in the community who we know can really use them. Yes, it's after the start of school, but it's better late than never. So erasers, pencils, pens, rulers, calculators,
anything that you can donate would be helpful. You can certainly bring it to the Southside Community Center. GIAC, we are collecting for that very purpose notebooks and composition books. So please, if you're able to, you know, purchase a couple, if you have a stash sitting in your office that the county let you have when you came in and you haven't used yet and you'd like to give away, there are some children out there who can use them. So please bring them by GIAC or let me know. I'm happy to collect them or have, you know, some of our other members collect them so that we can help put those in backpacks for our children. And that aside, you're all invited to just come down and encourage these young people about staying in school. Not just giving them something, but giving them some words of encouragement about staying in school and taking their education seriously. We know it's very hard these days for a number of families, and so we want to encourage them as much as possible. And it's nice to see some of your faces there with them. The event is scheduled from 3 to 6 on Saturday, September 8th at the Southside Community Center. We'd like the supplies to be donated to have it by September 5th so that we can be stuffing. So we appreciate your generosity in advance. The other thing I want to mention was at the Air Service Board meeting, and the Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport is sponsoring a travel photography contest, or it's for an exhibition. So they're asking for any sort of amateur photography from your travels. Exhibition date is October 1st through November 30th, and the submission deadline is coming up real soon, September 7th. So, Carol, if you took lovely pictures, not of your grandchild, in New York City, that you in your travels, that you'd like to participate in this exhibition, please let them know. Compete with the community to win a $500 airline voucher by sending in your most impressive travel photo. So you can get more information. Here you go, Frank. Facebook.com/FlyIthaca or FlyIthaca.com. You can get more information. So we're looking for photography for an exhibition at the airport. I also just want to say a big welcome back to our returning students, and welcome to those who are coming, students and families who are coming new to our community. And my shameless second ward self-promotion is, if you're looking for Wegmans, it's in the second ward, or Tops, or the Commons, or the fabulous Martin Luther King Jr. sculpture, who I saw a number of families taking pictures next to, or our lovely Kitchen Theater, or the State Theater, or any number of very significant places, recreation centers, Southside Community Center, GIAC, significant elements, the architectural salvage warehouse, because you need some stuff to fix up your apartment. There's so much that happens in the second ward here in Ithaca, which I do represent, and so I'm proud to welcome our students here and proud of our citizens, because we know when people come into our community because our road system is just so lovely. They're often going up the one way, and our residents are really kind instead of yelling and screaming at them like I witnessed when I first got to Ithaca. People are very kind, and everybody's trying to say, you're going the wrong way, and giving directions and really being as welcoming as possible. So welcome to Ithaca, and welcome back to our returning students and families. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. Jim, did you have your hand up?
I did.
And then Peter and Will.
The Trumansburg Fair, which is the longest running fair in Tompkins County, began today. It will be going on for several more days. And if anyone has their vehicle ready, the first heat for the Demolition Derby starts in a little while, and you can take part in that.
So you go from the community corners up to Demolition Derby. Peter and then Will.
A
couple of things. First off, I'd like to thank the Highway Department for the cleaning up the shoulders on Pine Tree Road. But no good deed goes unpunished. I went over to look at it, and I was quite surprised at what I saw. Namely, that the picture I have always had of Pine Tree Road is that the bridge, underneath the bridge, the railroad bridge, the amount of space that a pedestrian or bicyclist has to walk is much reduced over what it is outside the bridge. That was the picture I had. But it turns out that's not true. That once the shoulders are cleaned out, it turns out there is very little less space under the bridge than there is outside of the bridge. The reason is, the picture I had, sort of outside of the bridge, is that there's a paved road, and then there's a 2-foot shoulder, and then there's a big field. But in fact, there isn't a big field. What there is a big hill. And in fact, you can't go very much farther, either on a bike or by foot. You can't go farther than the shoulder when you're outside the underpass, except for the clearance that your shoulder requires, if you understand what I'm saying. And so that led me to conclude that idea of Doug Britton's of milling out the supports for the bridge is not absurd at all. I went out and made a calculation as to how much milling would it require so that a bicyclist would have as much room away from the road inside the bridge as outside the bridge. And the answer I came up with is something like no more than 1.5 feet. So 1.5 feet, I believe, it's quite possible to mill that out. So I think we ought to look very seriously at his proposal before coming to a final decision on it. That was one comment. My other comment was brought on by Frank's statement about the yogurt summit and its effect on the milk supply. And I'm not surprised. I don't know if I've ever confessed this publicly before, but about a year ago, I started a moonshine operation for yogurt in my house, and I make my own yogurt. And my house has got only 2 people in it, 2 seniors, and they're not milk drinkers. And very little milk was bought before my moonshine yogurt project. But now, believe it or not, I buy a gallon of milk every 3 days to keep the still going. So I had never thought of the effect on the local milk industry, but there you have it.
Moonshine and yogurt, all right.
Thank you, Peter.
By the way, it's quite good. It's really good. It tastes better than the commercial project. It's not Greek, okay, but it's pretty good.
Well, maybe you'll bring some in for some of our expanded budget committee meetings. Will.
Peter, I will be knocking on your door because I've always failed in my attempts to make yogurt. I was struck tonight by the hearing that we all heard and the quality of comments and just the intelligence that was brought to this discussion. I'm glad we are not voting on that issue tonight, and I really, really hope that we will all give this continued thought. I would love to hear from some members of the committee as to why they opted for C version 3 over 5, which they did consider. But at any rate, I'm glad we're not doing it tonight. I hope we will all continue to think about that. And that's my comment.
Thank you, Will. Frank.
Thanks, Martha. First, Peter, I'm impressed by your yogurt story. And I wanted to just bring to your attention the director of Public Health is sitting directly in back of you and has applications for a permit that you will need.
Oh,
I know. Oh. But we're all duly. The other is the comment about the bridge. Is your suggestion about considering milling out the abutment, is it with the intention that the existing superstructure, the actual steel bridge, be retained?
Yes, that's the idea.
Thank you.
Carol?
Yeah, I'll just point out, I was going to respond to Peter under my committee report, but I will just say, I'll note the space, the amount of space that actually got cleared and the change in perception is a matter of perception, and the committee has discussed this as an option. I think staff has looked into that, and as time goes by and we know what the financial situation is, that, you know, this is committee work, and we will do that if it's appropriate.
Thanks, Carol. Pat?
I'd just like to ask that as you consider that issue in committee of the space needs and underneath the bridge, that you be cognizant of the requirements for accessibility, which are sometimes wider than what you might expect to accommodate the needs of people with disabilities. So just when Peter mentioned the fact that that might be like a foot or a foot and a half more narrow, which might not seem like much, but I just think it's something to be aware of as you're making those recommendations.
Thank you, Pat. Let Kathy.
Thank you. Just real quickly, I want to share my delight. For those of y'all that aren't aware of it, Hospicare raised $350,000 this weekend with the help of local swimmers, volunteers, donors, a tremendous community effort. I know a lot of y'all donated to support it. I know we have a staff member here that participated. I can't help it, Barbara. I had to say it. I saw her glowing there. And we have family and loved ones of some of the legislators that participated. What a great community event. And the way that they handle it is just amazing. But what was, for me, as a swimmer, the coolest was the weather was perfect. Uh-huh. So I don't know how they manage that. Maybe they have some connections with the folks at Cornell that somehow manage the weather for commencement. But it was a terrific weekend, and I just want to say how wonderful it is to see the committee come together on something like that. Someone there commented that, well, I can't remember exactly what he said. He said half of the people in Ithaca are involved in making this a success, and the other half wish they were. So thanks to everybody that made it happen. And yay, Hospicare.
Thanks for saying that.
Anyone else? Maybe this is a little out of order, but Margaret, I would like to see if you'd be willing to answer Frank's question. It's mine, too, and maybe many of us. You did mention in the beginning during the hearing a little bit about that you looked at C5 and all the other versions, but you know, I don't want to presume that you might come back 2 weeks from now or you're here. I wonder if you have any comments that you'd like to make to help us understand that issue. You don't have to, but just wondered if. I think the city, the comments from the city that C5 is preferable to C3, and about the student district and et cetera. If you have any comments on that. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, fine. Thanks very much. Okay. Peter?
I have a comment on that. After the public hearings were over, I went out because I was getting itchy. I needed some more coffee. And I ran into Greg was outside. Greg Potter was there. And I asked him, were the concerns that were raised by the residents of the city raised before the redistricting committee? And his answer was he could not remember those concerns having been raised prior. And I mean that puts us in an awkward position. But I'm just announcing that that's what, you know, maybe he forgot them and so forth. But I did ask him that question, and that's the answer that I got.
Okay. Jim?
I'm not going to comment on that. I think they're well spelled out minutes, and you know, I don't agree with that statement. But I wanted to answer Will when he made a comment about the people who were speaking in the back of the room. I think if you get a bunch of county legislators in the back of the room talking, you're bound to get some very good things out of it, and that's what happened there. There were some really incredible people who've served the county, who came and talked to us.
Thanks, Jim. All right. The third time? Okay.
This is not per order of the floor. It's about the redistricting. Mm-hmm. If we're not going to consider the resolution tonight, could we receive copies of version 14CV5? Unless it's in that packet, I could only find three, V3.
Okay, I think that is, Greg's not here. All right, and Karen.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, Kathy, I'll make sure those are in your box.
Okay.
Karen?
I was going to do it under the committee work portion of our meeting, but that we receive copies of the one that's on the board there, the CV3, and of CV5 with our packets or on our desks the night that we will be discussing this, so that we're
I would
all
like
sure to have those as we discuss.
I think we all got this. It's a set of a very complete set of maps, color prints, and a long description of in English of all the boundaries. I don't think it's appropriate to ask staff to reprint these. I think what is not in here is the version that the city residents mentioned. But if you can't find yours, everybody got one of these a week or so ago?
Friday.
If you can't find it, check with staff. But I'm not going to ask everybody that we reprint 15 more. Brian, Mike, and Dooley?
I'm sorry. We got the V5?
No, we didn't get the V5. We got the V3.
It's the set that's been recommended by the commission. This is what we have.
What I'm asking for is the maps that look like that, but that are reasonable sized. I think there's a double page.
Yep.
One that's this big.
Is that the one that you got Friday?
That's the top of your packet. Looks like this. Fold it over. And then each separate district has its own map.
Well,
if you can't find it, I'm sure it's in your pile.
It has the local law filing.
Well, check it out. I'm sure the maps are there.
What I'm asking for is the same size so that we can put, as we discuss it, the V3 and the V5.
I'm sorry, Carol.
It's a reasonable request from a legislator for information in our packets.
All right. I think if we can get one printed, that'd
one
be
for
fine.
One for me, two, please.
Two printed. Brian, Mike,
would
and
you
Dooley,
like
I think.
One?
Brian?
I just wanted to point out that the last time I checked, which I think was last week, all of those versions are still on the county website. I mean, you can look at them starting tonight. There's no sense having those here 2 or 3 weeks from now and then start to think about it. We've got ample time to do that. And I did appreciate some of the questions and responses that we got.
Okay.
I didn't realize we had that many former legislators.
There are lots more where those came from.
Okay.
I think, Mike, you had your hand up?
Brian made my comment.
Dooley, then Pam, and Carol?
I think, I'm glad Frank asked what he asked. I think it would be reasonable to have version 5 in the same format that we got. We have version 3 already, but the thing that we wouldn't get with Carol's request is the districts within the city blown up. And if that could be added, I think that would be four ones within the city of the same size as are in the packet for version 3. That would be 5 pieces of paper to get them sooner rather than later so we can look at them well before the next meeting.
You mean not just this map at that size, but also the individual maps blown up?
Only within the city district.
For the
not,
city
not
district.
The rest of them. They wouldn't change.
Yeah. All right. So I would say we don't need the county size map.
No.
We just need then the city at that size. And that might constrain the expense a little bit and the work involved.
The other thing I wanted to say was, although all the versions used to be on the Independent Redistricting Commission's website, they've been taken down. So maybe they're on the county website, but they're not on the IRC's website anymore.
You're still there? Maps are under Tompkins County Redistricting, right?
Yes.
I was looking at them the other day. Okay. I think I've got Pam.
I just wanted to say that myself and I have had some other people go on the county's website to the redistricting commission and go to the maps, and they and we have not been able to get version 5. That when you go to you click on version 5, you end up with version 3. So it's not a reliable place for people to go. I don't know whether it's there's something wrong. Maybe our computers are too old. I don't know what the problem is. But it is not a place that I have felt comfortable referring people to because of that problem.
Okay, Kathy's looking right now. See if we can get it faster. All right.
I mean, some people can get it. But it's just inconsistent is what I'm saying. I told Greg about it today. So.
You told Greg. Okay, so Greg knows about it then. All right. Roxy's been waiting. Carol?
Yeah, I think I had my hand up. I also spent hours on the phone this week with people who called, trying to walk them through the independent redistricting website. And there's no arrow anymore next to the various versions that ended up being the various recommended versions. Right. You have to go back and know that of the 10 or 12 different news items that are listed, which ones even were the three recommendations that came to us, and then which were the maps that it got narrowed down to. You used to be able to see with arrows next to those maps, these were the ones that had gotten narrowed down to. So I mean, literally in the corridors of the hospital and on the streets of New York, huddled in doorways so I could be heard, I was trying to walk people through the website. Mm-hmm. If there's some way to make that clearer, especially if we're going to be sending people there and we're going to be referring to it, it's not intuitive.
Okay, it's public information. Marcia, is this something you can work with Greg about? Or is
Yes, it is. However, I just went online and I found that version, that 14C version 5 is there on the website.
Okay, what's the, I guess the request is that the commission, the sort of status of that as a secondary recommendation from the commission, which was, it was in between the first and the third recommendation, it was the second recommendation. I think that's what's requested, that that be identified in some way. Okay? All right. Roxy, thank you so much for waiting.
Martha, can I just say one thing?
Please? Oh, sure.
I'm glad if they need maps, I'm glad they're going to have them. But just remember, we had some folks speaking tonight to version 3, which is what the public hearing was on. If we were asking for a change, and you change that, and you went to 5, for example, there would be other people in other parts of the city who would be affected by that, who might be coming out. So it doesn't automatically mean that one is better than the first one. Hank DeLay couldn't be here because he's recently been appointed to the Board of Regents and had activities going on with that today. But hopefully he'll be able to respond to the comments made by the public and how the commission reviewed those things.
Thank you, Mike. I think it's a good point to ask him specifically for somebody from the commission to be prepared that way in 2 weeks. Pat?
I think I know probably the answer, but I just would like to have it confirmed to this question. I'd like to ask Jonathan, if we were to make that change from the version 3 to the version 5, would that require that we go back through the public hearing process again? Is Jonathan here?
I am here, and the answer is yes.
Okay.
Okay. And I think that since the commission recommended 3, the vote would not be for us. I haven't checked this with Jonathan, but my sense is the vote would not be that we swap 3 for 5 for 3, but that we would be rejecting the recommendation of the commission.
Right.
And then or asking them to go back and look at it again or something like that. So
no.
All right. Yeah. Let's put a pause on this. We're obviously going to talk about it on September 4th. I think we're done. I think we...
John.
Yes, go ahead, Carol.
The commission has made three different recommendations. Does that change? I mean, we actually received, you know, in writing, recommendations for these things. Is there precedent for that, or does that change how we would proceed?
No. I mean, you'll have a resolution on the agenda for at the next meeting, and you can vote for it or against it, basically. I mean, people could move to substitute resolutions, et cetera, but obviously if you change the local law, significantly, it requires a public hearing. But I would expect that this resolution passed by GO would be on the legislature agenda for the next board meeting, and that's what would be there for you to vote on for or against.
Thank you.
All right. I hope everybody remembers everything that's been said, so we don't have to say all of this again in 2 weeks. All right. Thanks, Roxy. We're very pleased that you're here, and I know you have very important news for us, so... Do you want to stand there? Or? Okay. Okay, great. Well, thanks for giving me a little bit of your time tonight, and a couple of quick comments that come before the hydrilla. If you want to get version 5, I heard from an expert you should refresh your cookies, and you will get version 5. And you should consider making homemade granola, too. It'll go great with your homemade yogurt. Okay, so ever
you
honored.
Should run for office.
So I'm supposed to do this in 10 minutes or less. Let's go back to the first slide real quick. There's a point in red. I redlined a lot of this stuff when I gave my first 10-minute talk to Chuck Schumer, who actually left the room, but he hosted the meeting. So we have had some U.S. Senate interest and support in this effort, and one of the things I wanted to highlight in the talk was that we've got 2011 through 2020. Please don't make the mistake of thinking this is going to be easily solved or a short-term effort, so just bear that in mind. Okay, next. I'll do just a little bit of review. It's always good to refresh ourselves on it, but I'll be quick on this. I know you all are aware of most of it. This is considered, if not the most, one of the most invasive plants in the world. It won't run its course. We're not going to find some happy place to coexist with it. It's spread by humans, by and large. And we found it last August. Next. You've seen these pictures probably before. We've got some three-week-apart pictures of Linderman Creek. It's the little creek, which before last year I didn't know had a name, in Cass Park where the footbridges go over, and this is looking out towards the inlet. In 3 weeks, it went from maybe 70% cover to 100%, and the next slide shows looking the other direction. So there you go. So what a difference 3 weeks makes. Next. It got here. We will never know exactly how. It probably came from the Potomac area. That's the next closest area in the country with this type. It probably came by boat, and that doesn't necessarily mean a power boat. It has ingenious ways to spread and survive, so any kind of boat. It also could have been brought here by an aquarium dump. It's not legal to buy this now or sell it, but people misidentify it quite a bit. So you can still accidentally end up buying or selling it. And they do expect that that is how hydrilla, the other biotype, was introduced to the United States in the first place in the 50s in Florida. Next. So we found it all through the inlet last year, mostly dense in areas where boats frequent, but isolated fragments growing all over the thing. Next. And we did find some small floating fragments, no roots attached, right where the inlet enters into the lake. Okay, next. So why should we be worried? I think you guys are pretty well up on this. It's an ecological nightmare all by itself. It will shade out all the other plants. It will stress, or it could even kill fish by reducing oxygen, reduces habitat quality. And it's also been linked to blue-green algae outbreaks. It seems particularly good at harboring these blue-green algae that create neurotoxins. And through that, it has actually caused bald eagle die-offs. Next. This is what we think the inlet could look like in 3 to 5 years untreated, which is, I know, why the county generously supported us in our efforts last year, and thank you for that. It also causes other economic impacts besides just looking unsightly. There's no boating, fishing, swimming in that.
cripples tourism, and along with that then come crashing property values. And there are documented studies in other parts of the country about what impacts hydrilla has if it's left unchecked. It costs quite a bit to eradicate it. It costs a whole lot more to manage it. So we're looking at the eradication step. And a reminder that it still hasn't yet been found in any connected water bodies in the Great Lakes system. So we are the gateway, so it's particularly important that we look at eradication. Next. You probably saw this last year or several other times. There's this invasion curve principle, and most of the time we don't find invasive species in time to eradicate them, but we did here. It is feasible. It's doable. We're following a plan that's been used in several other states successfully in the country. We have no reason to believe that we cannot achieve eradication. Next. So again, the goal is eradication, not control, not management. Long-term battle. It will take repeated herbicide applications. We continue to explore any other options that we find, but so far none of them are workable. So far we're still looking at long-term herbicide applications. But again, we're open to adaptive management, and we're working with experts across the country. So if other options come up that are more minimal, then we'll move to them. Response measures, go ahead and just click all these pictures up. Thank you. I didn't make this slide presentation. I don't even know how to do that. So this has last year and this year. So last year they did a survey of about 300-some points. Didn't find any growing in the lake. This year we're almost completed. I think we're at 1,400-some points and have not found any growing in the lake. So that's wonderful news. 300 points were done in the inlet earlier this year. Just to assess what was out there, and it wasn't a lot. We were really happy to see that last year's treatment did definitely knock things down, even better than we expected, I believe. And that will be repeated later this fall to assess the impacts of the herbicide treatment this year. Permit process went a whole lot better this year than last year, and a big shout-out to the Soil and Water Conservation District for taking the lead on that and developing a good relationship with DEC and the permit officer. Our applicator, Allied Biological, is the same this year as last year, and they've been very, very good to work with, very professional, very quick, and can throw in their work. Last year, you know, we had a longer inlet closure because we couldn't get all the permitting stuff in place, and we had the plants growing, and we didn't want it fragmented. This year, the way we used the herbicides, we didn't allow the plant to grow like that. So we only had to close the inlet for the first herbicide application. Because of how it's applied, it's just much more effective if they don't have to deal with boat traffic when they're doing that. It's also applied at a higher concentration, although it dissipates very quickly. So we separate the use from the application time frame. So we really minimize that impact on the community. Next. So the results last year were 95% effectiveness of knocking back the biomass. Next. We did see some plant regrowth and some intact roots, and that's why we're using a two-herbicide approach this year. We used the Endothel to knock back the early growth, and that was very effective, and then we waited a two-week period, and then we started the fluoridone chemical, which is actually systemic. So any of the plants that come back, as they make their way above the sediment line, they'll take up this chemical, and it will kill the tuber. So we should never – well, actually, a problem we're finding is a lot of people want to find and see the hydrilla. We don't have any to show them, so that's good. Last year, if you heard this talk, we said that if we'd had more time, we were really looking at this underwater diver-assisted dredging process, which is underwater weeding. We just didn't have the time to pull all of that off physically before we were told the tuber onset would happen and we'd have a lot more plants to deal with this year. In the end, because of permitting difficulties, there was an area we couldn't treat with the herbicides. So we ended up testing this out last year up off Floral Ave on the west shore. And we had a professional crew that uses this all the time successfully with milfoil and other plants. And it turns out it's just not going to work for hydrilla. I'll click it one more time. This plant's really fragile, so when it gets picked up through the vacuum hose and comes out the onion bags, they're literally onion bags, instead of the plant material staying in the bag and the water going out, the plant just fragments, and so we're sending thousands of pieces of hydrilla down the inlet. So it was a worthwhile experiment, and we know it's not going to work now. Next. So So I mentioned we use two herbicide treatments this year, and the second herbicide is going down in two ways. And if you want more information on that, I can fill you in later. But there's some pellets and there's some liquid, and that helps us achieve a constant level throughout all the areas of the inlet where we have good flow, where we have little bays. There's monitoring every week, and there are conference calls to make any adjustments that need to be made every week. Next. Oh, and we also had boat stewards this year through a grant, Great Lakes Restoration Initiative money, and administered by Finger Lakes Institute. We've had a permanent boat steward down at Treeman and two more floating around this lake. I think a total of 11 or 12 stewards on the seven most eastern Finger Lakes. And they've had a tremendous response. They said that 50% of the people at Treeman they find are regular return users. And after a few weeks, they didn't even try to approach the water. They'd just look for the steward and say, please come check out my boat. So that's good. So this is last year's complaining slide about how overwhelming it was. So I'm not going to go over the difficulties. I'm just going to say that one of the big steps forward this year is that with some state funding, we are going to be able to hire a coordinator for this effort, at least secure for 1 year. So hopefully we'll be able to get other funds to keep that person on. And then that will take some of the burden off the local folks here. And that person will probably live at Soil and Water Conservation District, and hopefully by living in that office space, they can also help them with some of the burden with the permit process as well. Next. Another one of the complaining slides from last year was the lack of regulatory support. We've made some steps forward, and again, thanks you to the county for the law that you passed to help us with transport of invasive plants. And also the state passed a law to allow DEC to work with, I think, Ag and Markets to create a list of invasive species that are prohibited or regulated in some way. And that will deal with that gap that existed last year where DEC actually had no authority over aquatic invasive plants. Next. Outreach efforts are pretty much the same this year as last year. We continue to be at the farmers market through August, and a shout out to the support from the Water Resources Council, one of the advisory groups for Tompkins County, for definitely helping put all that together and keep us moving forward. Also, Cooperative Extension takes a huge lead in this, and the Cuyahoga Lake Watershed Network, keeping our website up, which has changed to stophydrilla.org. So it's a lot easier if you want to find new information. You can remember that. You don't have to get the capital letters right. And you can get all the data you want. Or the latest brochures, we keep those updated. We've had public meetings periodically. We ran Hydrilla Happy Hours for a couple months until people quit coming to Happy Hour. So if they're not coming to Happy Hour, they may not be worried. It's a pretty good draw, I thought. All right, next. So as I mentioned, we are still doing a lot of monitoring. Tuber monitoring never stopped through the winter, and it continues on. We're having some interesting results, which we don't understand yet, but we just aren't seeing the kind of carryover of tubers that we expected. We were told a lot would remain dormant, and that's part of why it takes forever to successfully eradicate the plant. Don't get too excited about that and think that we're done this year. We are not done this year, but we might be doing a little better than we thought. And so that's good, and we'll look at that this winter. There's water quality monitoring that happens every week. And, again, all of that's updated on that stophydrilla.org webpage if you want. And I know a lot of folks have concerns or questions about the herbicides. Again, on the website, if you go there, there's a one-pager on both herbicides. It's really easy to digest. And if you're more interested in details, there's like 9 and 11 pagers on each of them, with references to actual research documents if you're looking for specific information. Okay, next. So this just covers all the things that have to be done, and the more red it is, the more difficulty we're still having with it. Like I said, permitting is really going much better this year. Outreach is great with the support of Cooperative Extension. Monitoring. I probably should have made that a lighter pink since we've almost accomplished it, and then since Bob managed to not find hydrilla, which is great. We still have issues with surveying, and by that I think I'm looking farther flung. We're sort of looked to by everyone, including the state. Who's gonna look over in Seneca Lake or Canandaigua Lake? And those are reasonable places to look because boats are moving all the time. But we can't handle that, and the state doesn't have the resources to it either. That's still a weak spot. There is a research symposium that's going to happen in Syracuse in early September. A lot of people from Army Corps and the state agency, EPA, and other local researchers and regional researchers are going to talk about all the things we don't know about hydrilla, that if we knew them, it would really help us target this eradication effort better. An anecdote is a researcher did a Google Scholar search on dioecious hydrilla, the one they have in Florida, and they came up with 5,000 references. They did a Google Scholar search on monoecious hydrilla, and they came up with 151 references. They're just very simple things we don't know, like what does it take to kill the tuber? You know, what light and temperature regimes really trigger certain parts of its life cycle? So we need to find those out. So we're going to make headway on that. Management is still kind of an issue because the agency doesn't have the staff or the authority yet, but we are moving in the right direction on that. Coordination will get better once we can hire this local coordinator. And regulatory tools probably should have gone to a medium pink, too, because we have made a little bit of strides there. So the story's getting a little better, a little better. Next. And just a reminder, we're the gateway. It's really important to stay behind this effort, whatever it takes. It's cheaper to get rid of it than to learn to live with it. And stophydrilla.org if you have other questions. So thank you.
Thanks so much, Roxy. Any questions? Pat and then Dooley.
Thank you, Roxy. This has been very informative. Is it possible to get a copy of this PowerPoint that you did?
Kevin has it already on your county computer, and he's going to get it to Marcia tomorrow. There's a new feature that I also don't understand in PowerPoint where you can hide a whole bunch of slides. So there's a lot more slides on here than I showed.
Okay.
I guess you can have all of them. If that's confusing, you can have the ones that were shown, as you wish.
Okay. Thank you.
Welcome. Dooley, Pam, Mike.
I have a couple of questions. Do you have any idea of how long it might take DEC and Ag and Markets to both create a list of invasives that we can use and when they will have some regulations in place?
I don't remember the deadline, but there is a deadline by when the list has to be created. That definitely doesn't answer your question about regulations that we can use, but there is a step.
The other question is very different. There was just something in the paper that you all got permission, special permission, to apply pellets in shallow water less than 2 feet deep. And if you needed special permission, I'm curious about what the reasons were why that wasn't allowed.
An attractive nuisance. A pellet could become an attractive nuisance to pets or small children.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Pam?
Well, I was curious about your reference to somebody who had Googled monoecious hydrilla and dioecious, and I'm not quite sure what the significance is of finding only a few references to the dioecious one, a monoecious one, and is the monoecious one what we have? I mean, and so does that mean that because there's so few references that it's not as prevalent or as invasive, or that nobody just wants to talk about it because it's so bad?
It's less prevalent in the U.S., so there's been less time to do research. And I don't know all the motivations for not doing the research. I know that a lot of times when you get it in a site, you want to get rid of it, so you don't spend a lot of time studying it. I don't think there is a lot of established monoecious that's beyond all hope of eradication. So again, everyone's going to be trying to eradicate it, as opposed to they have to live with it, like in Florida, where they can spend up to $30 million a year just managing it. At that point, it's perfectly reasonable to look for more details on the plant. So it just hasn't happened. But not being able to know exactly what kind of light and temperature constraints or how late the plant will set tubers really does change, you know, how you do management. It makes it less precise. Last year, when we found it, all through August and September, we were using information about dioecious hydrilla, and it turns out they behave very, very differently. Some of the researchers are now thinking that these shouldn't be biotypes, but might actually be different species because they're so very different. So importing the knowledge that finding it on August 4th or something, we had like 3 weeks to get it treated, or it would set all its tubers and be done, or also knowing that, you know, we couldn't do any fall treatments because there was no point to it. The plant finished early. That turned out not to be true at all. The plant was not only growing vigorously, but setting new tubers well into November. And we just didn't have that information.
Mike, were you the third person? Okay, and then Will.
we know it's in Cug Inlet. How about other region lakes, regional lakes? For example, should we be concerned about Dryden Lake?
If you have water, it's possible it's growing there. Fortunately, we still feel pretty good about this first year explosion last year, so there's a limited time frame it could have been transferred. But everyone should learn what it looks like and look for it if you use a water body. And if you think you have it, you can take a picture on your cell phone and report it on that stophydrilla.org webpage. Or if you're Frank, you can tell somebody where it is and they'll come take a picture on their cell phone.
On his horse.
Sorry. and check it out for you. But it can be in slightly brackish water, fresh water, still water, fast-flowing water, shallow, deep water down to 30 feet. People should look.
There's no organization that's going out and looking for it.
Well, as best they can. DEC just doesn't have that many bodies, but they have sent people to their launches to look, but they're not going to be everywhere. State Parks has been really good about sending people out to their parks and looking. Again, they're not going to be everywhere. I know a lot of residents in several of the surrounding counties have taken advantage of hydrilla training workshops. Mm-hmm. And at least on our lake, when I've been out doing some of the pesticide sign checks or herbicide sign checks, people will come out of their back door with that laminated hydrilla sheet, you know, saying, look, I look for it every day. I think I have it, or maybe not, you know, and they want you to check. So it really does work to have that information in hand, but we don't have a good way to distribute it. The state doesn't even have a mechanism to get those out. Right now, Bob Johnson's basically supplying the state with those locally here.
Craig, did you want to Craig, come up to the mic.
Yeah. I should have said Craig is my co-presenter here and can answer all permit-related questions.
Mike, specifically to your question, someone did call in. They thought they found it in Dryden Lake, and Bob Johnson, our aquatic plant expert, went out and checked, and everything he found was Elodea. He was pretty confident that it wasn't in Dryden Lake yet.
Thank you.
Will?
Thank you, Martha. Roxy, I just want to thank you for coming down and giving such a good presentation, but also for the incredible amount of work that you and all your cohorts have been doing over the past year. While no one is happy that we are saddled with this problem, I can't imagine. I think we have responded as a community about as best as one could imagine, and I think in a larger sense, we're fortunate that it was discovered here and that, you know, you're doing the science. So thank you. My question has to do with what somebody said in terms of the long-term need to continue eradication. Has anybody done any cost estimates over the next, say, 10 years as to what we're going to be needing and where the resources for that might come from?
Well, we have a general budget, and it will need to be adjusted if we really come away feeling good that there's no hydrilla in the lake. But our budget was $775,000 to a little over $1 million, somewhere in that ballpark per year. That was allowed for a lot of contingency funds for diver surveys to delineate things you found in the lake, for benthic barriers to put down on things you might find out in the lake, things like that that may not be needed. So if we really don't find it there and no one finds it popping else, ever, anywhere else in the lake and we're really just in the inlet, we're probably under that $775 going forward per year. Now, you really don't get a lot of cost savings, I don't think, from year to year to year, because you might miss one in any given year, and that's why you have to keep going. And what they tend to do in states who've done this program before is they monitor every year, and the monitoring has to stay at the same level. And after the third year of not finding the plant, Then they can take a step back and try not to treat and see if those not fines were real negatives. So it kind of stays at a certain level moving forward until you can finally step back on the management. And the monitoring is in perpetuity. It would also cut down after a while, but you never want to let it get started. Some of the research papers show that it's not the dense beds that are the biggest threat for spreading. They call it a nascent foci. It's that random fellow that hopscotched out a half a mile. That's the one that's the real danger for moving the plant quickly long distances. So you always have to be diligent. And then the outreach and getting all of the water-using community aware of what to look for is very, very important.
Thank you.
Carol, then Frank, and then I have a question.
Yeah, I want to add my thanks. That was an incredible presentation, really to the point. The graph of public consciousness and where we are on that and why it was possible for us to begin to address it, I thought was particularly informative. And the whole presentation, that in particular, would seem to me to be worthy of trying to get into the hands of each of the public bodies that have waterways. So for Dryden, you know, that to have that one graph that if you learn about this at this point in your lake, you can still deal with it, or even an earlier point. And same thing, you know, over in Seneca Lake, just to be sending that as a cover, you know, I hope somebody, obviously it wouldn't be up to our body, political body here to make sure that those in other places are thoroughly educated, but it would seem like we could share you a little bit to make sure that knowledge gets out and encourage the DEC to make sure that knowledge gets out. I have just a question about was the variety that was found of the hydrilla found in the Everglades and the Chesapeake and Washington, wherever else it's been in this country, was that the Monoecious or the called?
The two we have are in the United States are Dioecious and Monoecious, and most of the stuff in Florida, the Carolinas, is Dioecious. The West Coast has a mix. The Potomac area has more of the Monoecious, which is what we have.
Okay, thank you.
Frank.
And add to that, too, Carol. One of the chemical reps were here last week, and we had a meeting with them, the ones that sell us the endothal. And they said, really, the break point was about North Carolina. Almost everything north of North Carolina is Monoecious. Everything starting in South Carolina south is Dioecious. They said that's where the break point seems to be.
Frank.
Thanks, Martha. thank you. This, I don't think people appreciate, and I think you're beginning to, the amount of work that has gone into this and the outreach effort. Craig and Roxy have really spearheaded a lot of this, and the Water Resources Council has participated and supported the effort. But I think this board deserves a vote of thanks, too, because last year when when Roxy and Craig made a plea for money, you guys stepped up and really helped out. And as chairman of that board, I really would like to thank you for that. If you're impressed with the kind of work that these folks do, and I know you are, we currently need a county representative on the Water Resources Council. So if you're looking for a committee assignment, the first one to raise their hand will be appointed. Seriously, thank you very much for the – Martha, thanks for arranging this. This is really something that's been needed. It's not over yet. Roxy, or Craig, Martha asked about – the continuing vigilance. Can you say something about the monitors that are continuing to look for the material? Mike was concerned about who's really going out and trying to spot this stuff. And mention something about the amount of effort that's gone into the training of these monitors and how many there might be.
I don't know how many wild guess 50-ish who've kind of signed up, but more people have taken an interest, definitely, and taken home material so they can identify the plant. Bob Johnson is our resident scientist and does the bulwark of all the monitoring, I'd say 98% of it, and he's a great resource. Getting back to that, if it hadn't happened here, sort of issue. But the floating classroom was the credit for who found it first, having students out there who are being educated about aquatic plants and how valuable they are normally to the system. And a student noticed that this one didn't look like the others, and so that was a great education effort to continue to support there. The network has spearheaded a lot of the ID training workshops. The West Shore Homeowners Organization is doing their own training. It's sort of a train the trainer. Someone went to one of those network workshops. DEC, Scott Kishbaugh, really, and Bob Johnson have done some other workshops over four neighboring counties. If there's a local question, like I went up to Jennings Pond one day and looked at a bunch of Elodea. If there's a local question, someone here will respond within a day or two and come look at your possible hydrilla and sort it out. If it gets out of this county or too far away from this lake, Scott Kishbaugh is in charge of lakes and monitoring for DEC, is taking all of those concerns and sending out some kind of regional staff to do a response effort. And then we have the boat stewards now who are also helping with that. So it's happening, but it's not really official. There's not really a designated lead on this. And that's one thing that we've pushed for locally, is that the state needs to have the authority, the funding, and the bodies to have some kind of rapid response framework. Other states have that, to where something bad enough happens, they can actually send experts out and really make things happen quickly. We don't have that mechanism in New York State. And lots of times it's really nice that we're not in a cowboy sort of state and there are protections and you have to take deliberate steps and be careful and thoughtful. But once in a while that just gets in the way and it's a problem. So, okay, if we can finish up Dooley, and then I have a question.
Roxy, there have been mentions in newspaper articles about dredging and using it as a control mechanism. Is that seriously being discussed?
Yes. It is a real management tool that's used in California in irrigation ditches all the time. So small containable water bodies or small ponds, shallow ponds, they just dredge it out and remove all the tubers. It's nice and easy. It's over with quickly. The inlet is clearly too large to consider that as a reasonable mechanism, except for the fact that we were planning on doing it anyway. So it's not so much a problem of physically being able to consider dredging from bank to bank and deep enough. The tubers aren't that deep, 4 to 6 inches. The problem is how you handle that material carefully so you don't spread it, and where you store it for a long time, which gets back to one of those questions. We don't know. We've been told the tubers can live up to 10 years like this, which would make it a really difficult storage question. But we, as it turns out, we don't really know the answer to that, so that's a research question we have to delve into. So we talk about it, but there are some serious hurdles in the way.
I have a money question. Is it flowing? I mean, we had promises from the state legislature and many conversations back and forth. Are you getting what you need?
Right now, still in process, but the federal money, the $380, I have invoices in right now to receive about $250,000 of that. And everything I heard today was I should see the money next week. then I can pay the bills that we've incurred thus far for treatment. The $775,000, I think we're in contracting now for. I think it got that far. We had a lot of back and forth with DEC on how we wanted to use the money and questions about how that was going to happen. But I think we finally came to a point where supposedly, it's the contracting process right now.
And there's $25,000 in aid to localities, which explains the discrepancy of knowing we had $775 in state funds and seeing $800,000 in the newspapers. That I also believe is in contracting, and those funds will go to our outreach partners, Cooperative Extension, the network, and the Floating Classroom.
Mention the state parks.
Yes, I was just going to forget that. State parks allocated $60,600, and they did a pretty quick MOA with the Soil and Water District, so that money will come to us. That's all contracted, and I checked the state SFS website today, and it's in the queue. It's listed in there, so it means it's passed all, you know, everything through the comptroller and everything. It's pending to be paid, so I would expect we'd see that fairly soon, too.
Okay, that's good news.
Yeah.
So that covers this year. We expect the state is trying to work with us to get us something like that 380 for next year, but it's looking more like 304. So it's a little lower. We did not get a different grant that we applied for. The 775 that the state gave us, like I said, there were a lot of contingencies built in, and so far we haven't had to use those. So it looks like that funding will kind of cover us, the gaps for this year and next year, presuming we get the $304,000. There's no state parks funds counted on for next year, and we're still in the process where we have to go seeking funds every year. We're already kind of busy with other stuff. So one thing that Schumer's office had indicated early on was that they had hoped that we could find a way to have long-term funding set up for this process and not have to look for grant money every year or beg local budgets or whatever it came down to. And so we would still like to see something like that happen. It would take a big burden off of this effort. Okay, thanks. Joe?
Yeah, and that's kind of what I want to say, and I want to say it very quickly. First of all, I never go to the movies, so I'll probably screw this up, but I think there was a movie called The Avengers where there were a bunch of superheroes that did great things. Between Roxy and Craig and Liz Cameron and our own health department, Julie Holcomb, and a lot of others, it is unbelievable what they have accomplished over the past year to make sure that this isn't a pasture as opposed to a waterway. And with respect to funding, we'll ask where the money's going to come from. It has to come from the state and federal government. They own the water. It's a state waterway. And we have to keep the pressure on the state. And that picture is far more than the graph. That picture that showed a body of water that did look more like a meadow than a creek or a river or a lake, we can't use that often enough to remind people in Albany this is a critical problem we're trying to deal with, and really we are acting on their behalf when we ask for their money and spend it the way these folks have been spending it to kill this weed. So I just, again, want to express my appreciation and encourage everybody, whenever we get the chance, let's keep the pressure on New York State to keep the money flowing.
All right. Thank you both very much. We really appreciate your time and all your work. It's been great. I would like to go. I'm going to skip my report and the administrator and et cetera. Let's do the consent agenda. We have staff waiting, and then have our break, and then we'll come back to reports, if that's okay. So I'm going to read the items on the consent agenda. If you want anything pulled, please holler. Resolution A, ID number 3595, budget adjustments, various departments. Resolution B, revised in your packet, ID 3554, urging New York State to ban the manufacture, distribution, sale, and possession of dangerous unregulated synthetic drugs.
Pull
that one. Resolution C, ID 3563, authorization to execute a contract with Barton and LaJudas PC, County Public Works Facility, Fuel Distribution System Replacement Design Services, Bostwick Road, Town of Ithaca. Resolution D. Okay. Sorry, folks, you're not going home yet. Resolution E, ID 3558, authorizing community solutions for transportation contract with New York State Department of Transportation. Resolution F, ID 3557, authorizing 2012 Federal Transit Administration Section 5316 grant for job access and reverse commute, JARC, for Way to Go. Resolution D, ID 3546.
Off.
And off.
And I have some appointments. Find them. Where'd they go? Kathy, do you have them? I'm sorry, folks. Thanks, Kathy. Community Health Mental Health Services Board, David Shapiro, at-large representative. Youth Services Board, Jessica Troy Smith, Town of Caroline. Motion from Kathy, seconded by Carol. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? I think that's unanimous. Okay. Let's see. Frank, are you probably waiting for B? Okay. Let's do that. Frank Proto, could you take B so that we can perhaps do that before we break?
Okay.
And there's a revised version in your packet.
Okay. I'd like to move
3554. We're supposed to say the numbers now.
Oh, we are?
Yeah.
Suppose I want it to be a different number.
Confuse Michelle and Kathy, I'm sure.
3554, urging New York State to ban the manufacture, distribution, sale, and possession of dangerous, unregulated synthetic drugs. Revised version, move it.
Seconded by Kathy. And Peter, what's your question?
I didn't realize it was a revised version, so...
The revision clarifies the first resolve, Peter. The wording was a little cumbersome.
Okay.
And also, wait a minute, one other. The first whereas, we just changed the word abuse to use to make it read a little more clearly. Those were the only two changes.
Again, in the fifth whereas,
Okay, well, I would like to offer a friendly amendment, which I hope it will be found friendly. It turns out that in the whereas that starts on line 28 in the old version here.
Which whereas is that? What number?
It was whereas number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, whereas number 8. I'm told that the references to the bills are wrong. Those bills do not do that. It's complicated. There are a lot of bills. And it seems to me it would be much simpler, rather than writing this language that may or may not be true, to say what it is we want. And I would like to move to have that language read, whereas the state legislature, again, I don't know, why is that again? I don't know why the again is there. But whereas the state legislature has several bills pending before it that will amend the penal law and the public health law in relation to adding synthetic cannabinoids and substituted cannathones to the schedule of controlled substances. I was advised by the district attorney that this was a clearer way of saying what it is we want done.
Okay, the idea is to take the bill numbers out.
Right.
And you're going to...
And the whole rest of that wording in there.
Just substituting something more general.
Somewhat more general. The argument for it is that the district attorney said that's what we really need. Immediately we need the penal code and the public health law amended to put these things on it. Okay, there's a whole lot of other things that are being done.
Okay, so Kathy, then Frank.
It sounds reasonable. I'm curious as to whether you would leave in the language about statewide substituted cathinone surrender program, and if there's a reason that that's not relevant. Did you get information that the different bills don't include that, or that there's a problem?
To allow for the surrender of these harmful substances, that seemed to be a minor thing in there. The suggestion was that we target what we really need as an amendment to the penal code. At the moment, we have no way of enforcing it. It's not crimes to send it, and that's really what we to sell it. That's really what we need.
Right. I'm just trying to figure out whether it's suggested any way of allowing for surrender of these harmful substances to the appropriate authorities, which some people felt was important in our previous discussions.
Well, again, my advice by people who, in fact, deal with enforcing these laws was that that should not be particularly...
Okay, before I go to Frank, did you have something else?
No.
Could you read us again how you want it to read?
You asking me?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Whereas the state legislature, and I want to take out the again, whereas the state legislature has several bills...
Pending, you said,
pending
right?
Pending bills before it that will amend the penal law and the public health law in relation to adding synthetic cannabinoids and substituted cathinones to the schedule of controlled substances.
Okay. All right. I'm striking before it.
Don't strike it yet. I'm not considering that friendly.
Okay. Okay. Is that all you want to say?
Go ahead. No, it isn't. Peter, I have some concern about and I appreciate what you're trying to do to simplify this, but my understanding is, and I want to go back to something Kathy asked, the after the parentheses that would create a statewide substituted cathinone surrender program. I'm not sure that, and I'd like to turn to Frank Krupa to see if he has any more clarification. I'm not sure if removing the rest of that would destroy our opportunity to participate in any statewide programs and receive any funding, should it become available, to implement some of this. If the bill numbers are indeed incorrect, and we can check that, that's an easy fix. But changing the content, I want to make sure we don't shoot ourselves in the foot by changing the content. And I... Frank, if you have any clarification on that, perhaps you could help us out, because the Board of Health weighed in on this, too.
Sure. First, the language that's proposed here came from NYSAC, just to make sure I say that. And these were the particular bills that they were proposing at the time that be supported. I have no problem with the more general statement. The point to the being able to surrender... that is somewhat of an important issue for us as far as if we're going from something being legal to being illegal, and there are large quantities of it out there, those folks that want to be able to dispose of it need to have a method, and the proposal is to have a statewide process so that responsibility doesn't fall to us here locally.
Okay. I mean, let me say, it's very hard to rewrite these things on the floor. I have no objection to having that added in. The concern was that these two bills are only having to do with, they only have to do with the surrender program. And I don't think there was any objection to the surrender program, but that did not seem to be the major issue that we're forcing. We needed to criminalize it.
Okay, the issue, though, Frank, Peter, is that you're taking out a lot of other language. It's not just that you're taking... I mean, I was with you as far as you said there's several bills pending that would do these things. That seems reasonable. But you're changing a lot of stuff in here. Let me go to Pat, then Kathy. I'll come back to you, Peter.
Yeah.
Pat?
I think what I wanted to say would have been out of order. We have a motion on the floor.
Yeah, this is on the floor.
Yeah, okay. I'll hold my comments till we vote on this.
Kathy seconded.
Yeah.
Right, Frank and Kathy, right?
Yes.
Peter's asking if his motion is friendly. So let me just... Okay, to be clear, as you understand, it is not friendly. Okay. So... Let me just say, we have a general sense of what the amendment is here. Is there a second to Peter's amendment? Okay.
Okay. And
Wait, I did have Dooley.
Wait, you know what, I'll second Peter's amendment, because if you look up that number, it's about motorcycles.
6694A?
6694, I believe. Oh, wait, I'm on the assembly site, so.
All right, okay. Dooley was next.
Okay, you got me in line?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Me too.
Was it?
I don't mind saying that the penal law and the public health law need fixing in some way, but we're not specifying exactly how, and the addition of cannabinoids surprised me, because this thrust was about cathinones and not cannabinoids. So I don't know, maybe the DA would really like cannabinoids to be addressed more specifically, but that wasn't the thrust of this resolution to begin with. So I would rather, that's why I didn't second Peter's language. I like the general idea of pointing out what parts of state law need to be amended. I like the general statement about cathinones, but I definitely want to see that we keep something in there about a surrender program. So the language that Peter proposed I didn't think was something I could support, but some of the ideas I wouldn't mind having added.
We've got Kathy, Frank, and Peter, and Pat.
As Frank mentioned, I think we can deal with the possibility of the bill's numbers not being inclusive enough, and that there are other bill numbers available, and I think we can deal with that. I think it's an opportunity to consider adding some of the penal language that's being talked about, but I agree with what Dooley said. Although synthetic marijuana is a dangerous, unregulated synthetic drug, according to many people, it wasn't the intent of the original resolution. Maybe it's something that we should deal with, and I think that that's important. But since it's unfriendly and it takes away the surrender factor, I also wouldn't support it as a separate motion or as a change.
Frank, Peter, Pat, and if anybody wants to suggest other language, right, then that's an option.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to go back to something Frank Krupa said, that this language came from NYSAC. It isn't anything we created on our own or on the fly. My suggestion would be that we leave it alone, with the understanding that between now and when this has to go off to Albany, we check the bill numbers. And if the bill numbers are incorrect, let's fix it. But if we have to come back and do something else, we can certainly pass something else with Gwen's help, just to tighten up the penal language. But I don't know that we want to tinker too much based on particularly the statewide surrender program. That's a really important part of this. Peter, I'm sorry, I just couldn't accept it as a friendly amendment.
Peter, you're next.
Yeah, I'm sorry to be spending so much time on this, but I'm perfectly happy to add the thing about the statewide surrender program. I don't think that's the big deal. The problem is that the two laws cited only deal with the statewide surrender program. They don't deal with any of the other laws. So that this language I'm suggesting, I mean, sure, there's nothing that, there's no real issue that's dividing us. The language that I'm suggesting puts in, and there's a whole lot of laws that are being proposed now. That's
okay,
what,
Peter, the suggestion you made didn't get a second. Why don't you try another suggestion?
And the other suggestion is to add in this the thing that that people are unhappy about deleting, namely, and put that and would create a statewide substituted cathinone surrender, blah, 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 that thing, the last clause in there. Just add that too.
Point of information?
Yeah.
I think that Carol seconded Peter's motion.
No, I'm not.
No.
Carol?
No,
I did.
She did.
Yeah, I thought she did too.
I would challenge that, Madam Chair.
I did for purposes of discussion.
Belatedly. Well, we're discussing it, so.
Yes. So I am not finding, there is an assembly bill that is is 01834A, and there is no same as. So I think that it doesn't make sense to refer to specific numbers because it they don't seem to be in here. But the rest of what Peter, you know,
okay,
I understand the objections to the ways that it was phrased. So if we just find a way to
if I could really solicit the simplest, least change, least amount of change, noting that the resolution as we have it went through the Board of Health and the Health and Human Services Committee. So if somebody could please just make a suggestion that takes the bill numbers out and doesn't do anything else, I'd be happy. I don't know about anybody else. Pat is next, then Brian, and then Carol.
Well, I was not going to suggest what you're asking for, Martha. Okay. I was going to, if it would be in order, and I guess this has been seconded, I would like to offer an amendment to Peter's amendment that would bring back in the language about the surrender program, wherever that is here.
It's friendly to me.
Okay.
To Peter's amendment,
so
that it would be the Peter's amendment with the surrender language added back in.
Is there any time deadline? This the legislature
yeah,
is not in session.
I was just going to ask that. Can this go back, please?
The next person I've got is Brian.
Mayo, that's exactly what I was going to suggest. If the district attorney has some concerns with this, then she may want to be here to voice them. Let's not forget this is not our law. It's put very nicely at the first resolve. Tompkins County Legislature strongly urges the state legislature in meaningful and effective legislation. That's what we want them to do. I mean, we don't have to we really don't have to go beyond the generalities such as what Peter's mentioned. I do agree that if there's going to be a surrender program, we should also embrace that as well. But I guess at this point I would say let's send it back. Maybe in the meantime we can check those laws if the specific laws want to be in there. Those laws might change between now and then. I mean, who knows? And they're not in session anyway.
Okay, Carol, then Leslin.
I was going to suggest just going to wording that was much more vague, a la our resolve, whereas the state legislature has several bills before it that would address these issues, and some of which would address these issues or would address these issues and would create a statewide surrendered program, and then leave it very vague like that. Shall I amend Peter's?
I think we actually have two amendments, although, I'm sorry, Pat's amendment was accepted as friendly to add in the Cathinone surrender program. So you could make another amendment to the amendment.
No, that's okay. And then I have another question about the content of the resolution, and I don't know if this is the right time to ask it or to resolve this amendment.
Well, go ahead, Carol. We're not following protocol anyway.
I will wait. No, I agree.
I've got Leslin and Pam and then Peter.
I'm Chair, because I'm having a hard time following the bouncing ball of what the language is. I'd like to move that this be sent back to committee so we can engage the wisdom of the district attorney and everybody else who has something to add to it and bring it back when we can be in agreement with it.
Second.
Would you like to specify which committee?
The Health and Human Services Committee.
Okay. Pam?
Second.
Okay. So that is on the that's now before us. Any discussion on sending it back to Health and Human Services Committee? Frank?
Frank, I think it should go back, since the Board of Health also weighed in on this. I think it ought to, whatever discussion takes place, ought to also take place at the Board of Health. Is
sure.
there?
Sure, absolutely. And I'll reach out to Gwen to figure out how we need to fix it.
Okay, yeah. but the concern is we don't want to lose the wording regarding the statewide surrender program. Okay.
Yep.
Thank you. That's okay with me.
Okay. Are we ready to vote on sending this back to HHS? All in favor, please raise your hand. Twelve to one. So it is sent back to HHS. Carolyn?
Yeah, I have a question for Frank while he's here on this issue.
It's going back to committee. Why don't you get in touch with them offline? What? Okay.
I'd like to ask in front of everybody. Okay. I'd just like to know whether, in light of the fact that these drugs are being made to get around the fact that marijuana is not legal, is there any discussion on the state level of the advisability of revisiting that question?
Yes, it's obviously part of the discussion, because why we're losing the battle is these things change so rapidly, it's hard to get them on the controlled substance list quick enough for appropriate action to be taken. This particular resolution was related to bath salts and the issues associated with that, because it's the first major hurdle that we want to get past. The synthetic marijuana is also part of the discussion, and there is also proposed legislation there. This was the most solid at the time when we put the resolution together, and that's why it was brought forward for support. Does that answer your question?
Well, not exactly. I'm asking whether there's any discussion of revisiting the notion of making...
Legalizing marijuana.
The plant itself, so that people stop trying to make all these synthetics.
I think that's a pretty big leap. I haven't heard anybody say that that's why bath salts are popular.
Point of order. This is sort of out of order.
It is. It's time to move on. Okay. I would like us to deal with resolution D, please, under, that's facilities, so that Barb might be able to go home with curbside collection. That's page 8. Carol, you want to take packet page 8?
Where are we going?
Resolution D. It was pulled off the executive, off consent agenda.
So you want me to introduce that now?
Yeah, so we can take a break after
yes,
Barb's gone
thank
home.
Thank you. I move the resolution D, award of contract curbside collection recyclable materials.
Say the number.
Resolution D.
Actually, no number.
Say
is that
number.
Is that 3540A? Is that the number there?
Yes.
3540. Okay. Seconded by Dave. And who pulled it off? Kathy?
I was one of the people that asked it to be pulled off. I was wondering if we could get a summary from... the Director of Public Works, Barbara Ekstrom, about some of the details of this, as it was a concern expressed certainly in my district and others in the city.
Okay, Director of Solid Waste and Recycling, Barb Ekstrom, hello.
I didn't hear the last couple of words, I'm sorry.
It was blah, blah, blah.
And what am I supposed to do with that?
Whatever you want.
Some residents in your district were concerned.
And folks in the city, and I knew that your summary would help clear up any.
Not the summary I wrote for the committee, but the concern that was raised about the start time.
That in specific, but any general things that you think would help educate
the
public?
Sure. First of all, we've been doing this a long time now. We've been doing this for over two decades, and the county took responsibility for collecting recyclables through a contractual arrangement throughout the county. So you can only imagine, when you're dealing with 41,000 residents and in both apartments and in curbside single families, all the things that go on. I'm happy to report that the bid, we did get three people to come to the pre-bid meeting, because some of you are probably wondering, why did we only get one bid? And three hauling firms, two of which were regional, came. I talked to them after the bid as to why they didn't bid, and they said it's far too extensive what we're trying to do on a large scale basis, because we've got the residents in different ways, we've got small businesses and other things, and they didn't feel they had the capacity to do that. I am happy to report that the bid that we got from Casella came in within 0.2% of the total budget, which is remarkable. It was only off by about $18,000 on a roughly $1 million contract. And so that's really, really good news, because we put in a lot of extra things that we thought would cost more money. So as far as that's concerned, I'm very content. As far as the actual proposal, one important thing is that the number of homes has increased by roughly 3,700, and that's really the delta in terms of why this bid was also higher. 3,700 homes, you know, that's quite a bit since the last bid. So that really does boil down to about $60,000-something. We're happy with the work Casella does. There's always problems that arise with curbside collection. We as a county are responsible for fending those off, addressing them. They come in either through our customer service in a number of ways. The missed collections are less than 1%, and we address all complaints and we forward them to the company, so that works really well. Does anybody have any other specific questions? Is there something you want me to address?
Frank, and then Kathy, then Julie, then Leslie.
Okay.
Have we really been doing this for 2 decades?
Did you see the people in the back?
I remember that.
I've been here for 25
okay,
years.
Okay, guys. It's 10 of 8. What's up, Frank?
The first item, periodically you supply us with a breakdown of what we're making on the recyclables by commodity.
I usually do per quarter. Joe gets those, and sometimes Tom gives those to you, and then I also report twice annually to the committee.
Okay.
We laxed on that?
Can you send me a set?
Yeah. Tom's supposed to tickle his file and automatically do that. Revenues are good right now.
The second item is, this is a proposed five-year contract. Does it presume that the recycling fee will stay at a certain level for those 5 years? Is that built into a projection?
What do you mean by a recycling fee? I'm not clear. The annual solid waste fee?
Yeah.
Does it the cost is what it is, and we're going to reflect that cost in the budget, and we are on budget with this contract. So that's really the easiest way. It feeds into the budget.
But have we projected the solid waste fee for 5 years?
I'm in the process of doing that. I've made a recommendation that actually we have a budget meeting tomorrow for the fee to remain the same based on a whole lot of factors for next year. But Joe and I are anticipating that fee will go down as debt is retired. There is a CPI increase that goes with this contract that's well stipulated in the actual language that Jonathan put in the contract.
Yeah, because the capital program cost is supposed to be erased, certainly, in the next...
In 2015, not all of it, but a chunk of it. What you'll see, I mean, we are putting that together. It'll be ready by the third week in September.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you.
Thanks.
Kathy.
Well, thank you. I want to start out by saying that I've got anecdotal evidence from folks in the downtown area that one person said 3 years ago, 2 bags of garbage once a week. Now, 1 bag of garbage every 6 weeks. Why? Single stream recycling. The number of things that have been added to recycling, and now food scrap at the solid waste facility. It's a tremendous service that's offered. It's an enterprise, which means it's supported by our
annual fee.
Thank you, by the annual fee. And the concern that I wanted to raise, and I talked with Barbara about this before the meeting so she could summarize it, is some members of the public in my district are concerned because of the way city residents and some others in densely populated areas have very early pickup times for the recycling trucks. So I wonder if you could just address that on the floor.
The issue is that the collection starts in the city and works its way out, and there's a lot of issues with routing. We looked very, very hard at whether or not we could move that to a later time. And there are three basic reasons why, at the end of the day, I felt that it wasn't a good decision. One was because we did talk with the city, and particularly the DPW that does the trash collection there, and they said that there are a lot of safety issues inherent with trucks going down roads with kids going to school and people and traffic. The second reason is because we are getting a lot more now, as you mentioned, in the single stream loads, and as a result of that, it is taking more time to collect in various districts. And then, of course, what was my third? That's the problem with turning older. My third actually had to do with the fact that we're going to have to look at the routes carefully. And it isn't that one area always needs to be the recipient of 4 a.m. And it's not to say that it will always be 4 a.m., but to basically serve the community, we would have had to have gone to a second truck, and that would have costed a that was my third, and that would have costed a significant amount more money. So,
thank you.
Did my best.
All right. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
I think I have Dooley, then Leslin.
So, I think I just heard you say that the contract includes possible escalation of costs with CPI built in,
mm-hmm.
because that wasn't summarized in the
resolution. Yeah, I actually have. I could tell you exactly how it reads, but I don't. I forgot to bring my packet up front.
The other question about the contract, is there an option to renew or withdraw within that contract?
Jonathan, help me out here. Within the 5 years? I'm going to let you speak to that because there's language in there.
Yeah, honestly, I don't recall. I believe there is not within the five-year period.
Well, if they're in violation of the contract, of course there's an opportunity to do that.
Right.
And, you know, this would have to go through a reasonableness test, of course. Now, since we've been doing this now, with this company for the past 20 years. I mean, not to say that anything couldn't go wrong, but my confidence level is pretty high in terms of the service delivery. But if you hear or know of anything that you think is a problem, I really need to know about it as soon as it comes to you, because there's easy ways of making sure we work out circumstances.
If I can add to the CPI question, there's actually two, and there isn't a lot of solid waste contracts these days, there's actually two separate CPIs, if you want. We divide how much is fuel versus how much is labor as opposed to other things, and fuel has a different CPI, basically, than non-fuel. So there's really two CPIs. And it's based on what percentage of the contract is fuel and what. And we have the same thing in the recycling and solid waste center contract, which is fairly common these days because of concern over
just
fuel
to,
prices.
To also switch back to your question, here you go. Item 18, termination and cancellation of the contract. The county reserves the right to cancel the contract without cause with a minimum 30-day written notice. Termination or cancellation of the contract will not relieve the bidder of any obligations, et cetera, et cetera. There are more stipulations in here as to you know, that clause. I mean, I think that's in all county contracts, quite frankly.
I thought it was a really good contract, but I couldn't remember the details.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're here. I actually would like to suggest two changes to the resolution based on information you've shared with us tonight. In the second whereas, which would be line 5, expanded to read, whereas three firms came to a pre-bid conference and thereafter one bid was received from one company on July 31st. And the next one would say, whereas a staff analysis of whether the proposer is qualified and is the lowest responsible bidder, since you only had one and it was worded as though there were multiple.
Right.
So those are just...
Right. Carol, is that friendly?
Can you just say that again?
With the whole thing, yes. Whereas three firms came to a pre-bid conference and thereafter, as it says in line 5, one bid was received from one company on July 31st, 2012.
I think it's friendly.
And Dave,
could I just make
unless
one
staff has an objection
change to that?
Certainly.
You could say, whereas only one bidder bid, because they actually bid two bids.
There was a base bid, which is what we're awarding in the alternate to provide containers.
So it wasn't.
That's fine. I was just tracking.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
It's much better.
That's a good idea.
Yes.
I think it was Dave. Did you second it?
I did.
Pam second? Oh, is that friendly?
Yep.
And the other part is the staff analysis, something
it's
else.
Of whether the proposer, right?
Yeah.
The proposer is qualified.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay with me.
All right.
Yes.
Leslin.
Barbara, committee, I asked about finding out about this company's diversity efforts and about if there was information provided in their bid or in our request for proposal for them to speak to their efforts around diversity and inclusion, and I don't know what information you received.
I did find it. I pursued it right away because I also pursued this right away with great success with Reed Community in terms of their meeting terrific goals. Mm-hmm. That company has a 1/3 success rate, 30% success rate in diversity and inclusion. I got a statement from John Casella, mm-hmm. actually, regarding not only their policy, but regarding their commitment to recruit with regard to race, creed, color, religion, et cetera, so on and so forth. And, you know, I can certainly send that, and it's signed by him, and it's their intent to implement these policies, and, you know, he wants himself to be held accountable. I happen to know John Casella, and you got to see John Casella at the grand opening for the Recycling Center. And let me tell you this much. I would like to follow up with you a little bit more about what you may be aware of that I might not be, and I will make sure that they are put on notice in terms of the county's diversity and inclusion policies,
right.
And that I will hold them accountable for reporting to me, you know, what they're able to do and what they've done, you know, all over the country. So that's my plan.
Okay. Pat?
And it is in the contract, I'm sorry. It is in the standard language. But, at the, you know, where the rubber meets the road is, what are you doing?
Right.
And that's what I'm going to be working on.
Thank you.
Pat?
I was just wondering, did you say there's language on that they have in the form of a policy or something?
They do.
Okay.
They have both a policy that's written, and they also have, I asked them specially for a documentation from the CEO of the company.
I was just wondering if I can also get a copy of that.
Why don't you send that to all of us?
Yeah, that's my plan.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you. Frank and Carol, is this relevant to voting?
Barbara, can you say what the current cost of this contract is? Maybe you did already. I'm sorry.
No, I didn't. I'll do it in the form of a dollar per household, because you can relate to that a lot easier. We're currently paying with the old census data, so you can't really compare. $1.90 per household per month. And that's incredibly cheap, and what we are about to approve, hopefully, is incredibly cheap also compared to the rest of the country. We're going to $1.96 per household per month, which boils down to current cost is $880,000. The new cost is $980,000. And of that, roughly $67,000 is the result of the new homes, and the remainder of it is that we have added a lot more small business units every other week. Yeah,
I trust you're rounding. The resolution says 981,860. Is that's
I was rounding
that. Okay,
and that's exactly what it is.
Okay, Carol and Brian.
Sure. Yeah, I'll just in response to various comments, I'll just point out that first of all, second what Kathy said, she said it much more articulately than I could about how important it is for us to be pursuing this way of dealing with our solid waste by recycling. The cost to do so is what it is, and I'll point out that various counties and municipalities have various ways of dealing with that cost. You'll recall when we talked to the Cortland County folks,
They have a very different approach to paying for the handling of their solid waste, and they wanted information about how we've managed to achieve what we've achieved in our county. In terms of the, so I do support this, and I think it's a very separate question when budget time comes, how we want to deal with mm-hmm. assessments and fees. It's a different question than whether to award this contract. In terms of diversity, I will say that we did discuss this in committee at some length around this and around other contracts as well, and it is something that's important to us. Having a broad statement for a company like this is a first step, and we would love to have them back as we did with some of the airport contractors we asked to come in and discuss, among mm-hmm. other things, mm-hmm. what, you know, sort of more specifically mm-hmm. what their implementation strategies were, and just to reinforce, to help Bob Nicholas reinforce that this is something that's important to our county. And then I will just ask one question that's come up in various emails and places around the county is the way in which this might or might not, does or doesn't, relate to what's going on in Newfield for the request to expand their waste transfer station.
No, that's a whole separate issue. They don't collect residential garbage even. They collect commercial garbage. And
okay, that's not relevant
related.
Here. So, Brian? It's really not relevant.
So I wanted it answered in public. Thank you.
Okay. Brian?
I'd like to call the question on the revised amendment.
Okay. Second by Peter. All in favor of calling the question, please raise your hand. Any opposed? All right. Time to vote on the revised Resolution D. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? 12-1. That passes.
Thanks,
thank you, Barbara.
Thank you. Nice
all right, I'm going to ask us to take a 5-minute break.